You're listening to A Lump in the Road. This is the diary of my sister, cancer, and me.
It is the 21st of November, and this is Heather Hilton.
And this is Larissa Pickerton.
Do you feel like a news reporter when you say that? Like the two runners?
I do, but I'm quite glad that we're not Insta-living, because I don't think we look worthy of an Insta-live or a news report.
I see, I don't do Instagram. Do you have to be hot to do Instagram?
I think it certainly helps.
Okay, fine. Anyway, thank you so much if you listened to our last podcast and you're joining us again today. If you did listen, you'll remember that Larissa, my beautiful sister, had a horrendous diagnosis, and we were waiting for the results to come back. And actually, when we recorded our last podcast, it was going to be the following day.
Yes,
where we learnt kind of the type of cancer, I guess, that you have got. So if you were listening, I think it's quite right to put everybody out of their misery as quickly as possible. It's not the X Factor. So
yeah,
you had your appointment on the Tuesday.
I did. And fortunately for me, it was the what I would call bog standard type of breast cancer. So that means it's estrogen and progesterone receptive. So most breast cancers, between 70 and 80% of breast cancers, fall within that category. And my multidisciplinary team, MDT from now on in, were very keen to point out that the treatment they are going for will be a curative treatment rather than anything else. At the moment, the cancer they think is stage one, so it's very early days. There is a slight discrepancy in the size of the tumour. So the professor who scanned me on the ultrasound and read the mammogram results felt that the cancer was 1.6 centimetres in size, whereas the consultant who did the physical examination thought that she could feel it at closer to 3.
So she did it on a feel and a touch basis, whereas the other doctor did it from viewing the ultrasound.
Yes, that's correct. Now, I mean, I have been on Dr. Google, sometimes a good thing, sometimes a bad thing, and ultrasounds can make things look smaller, even though they are not meant to.
Oh, really?
But that is possible. Mm. But I need to add very quickly, the team then recommended that they wanted me to have an MRI scan to determine the exact size of it before we then decide on the treatment plan. So there's one other thing as well that they're not quite sure of is on the cancer cell, along with the hormone receptors, is another receptor called a HER2, so HER2. And you have a status of HER2, which can either be negative or positive. Now, if it's negative, it means that the cancer is less aggressive. If it's positive, it's slightly more aggressive. Now, that doesn't mean it's not curable, and it doesn't mean that the treatment will be vastly different. But what it does mean is that the treatment could be different. So
you were telling me with the negative and positive,
yeah,
there were numbers attached that as well, weren't there?
Yeah. So they grade it 1, 2, or 3. And currently, from the two pieces of biopsied tissue that they took, mine was coming out at 2. So ideally, we need that to be 1. Negative.
So a 1 is negative, a 2 is
ambiguous,
and then the 3
is positive.
It means it's more aggressive.
Yeah, more aggressive.
Okay.
But even if it turns out to be a level 3 and the tumour turns out to be 3 centimetres or even slightly larger, they still feel that when they put all of the risk factors into what he described as an algorithm, and I'm actually not even sure whether it is a real algorithm or not, it could well be. They talk about it as risk-based analysis rather than definitive, this silo means, this silo means. They don't look at it like that. They put it all into a melting pot, for want of a better word, and it gives you a risk factor.
Okay.
Now, the consultant that I saw on Tuesday, who was lovely, of Scottish, which immediately made me feel brilliant. Our dad is Scottish. So he felt that based on what we know for sure, that this felt like a low risk breast cancer.
What do they mean then by low risk? Low risk to your...
Low risk to my life, I think. Okay. Yeah, I think it means, although it's still an horrendous thing to have, and we shouldn't dismiss that, I think it means and I've interpreted it as it's curative.
Yeah.
It's going to be brutal,
yeah,
but it's curative.
Do you know,
cure, sorry, it's going to be treated.
When you think back to what this news, I mean, this news is devastating and we all know it is, but if you think back 10 years, maybe 20, certainly, yeah, what this kind of news would have meant then,
yeah,
you've got to look on the positive side as much as you can, because it's not all going to be positive, is it?
No, it's not. And I'm taking the wins where I can. I can honestly tell you, and this may resonate with other people, but if you had told me 3 weeks ago or 4 weeks ago before I found the lump that one day, not in the not too distant future, that I would walk into an oncologist's office and be told that I'd got cancer and I'd walk out feeling grateful with a big smile on my face, I never would have believed you. But I promise you, last Tuesday, they reassured me to the extent that I did feel grateful. I felt happy when I walked out.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Because,
and it was genuine.
And the week,
yeah,
previous week had just been so horrendous, hadn't it? And the waiting.
It was dark.
Yeah.
I think the waiting is always going to be the worst part of any of this, because when you don't know something definitively, your mind just can make it up. Well, and it does, yeah, and it runs circles around your logic. It's not rational.
But it's like you said to me, you know, when you first told me and I went into, okay, I think everything's, yeah, going to be fine mode.
Yeah.
It was because, and I know we talked about this actually yesterday, we talked about, like, you call it the trapdoor.
Yes.
And I like that now. So I call it turning a switch and not allowing yourself to go there, or closing, yeah, the file and putting it,
yeah,
somewhere you can't reach, yeah, for that moment. And you have talked about it being a trapdoor and closing the trapdoor until, yeah, you need to go down into that horrible dark cellar.
For me, I don't know what that programme was we used to watch.
Trapdoor!
Yeah, step away from that trapdoor. So every time...
Away from the trapdoor.
So every time I feel that I don't want to go to a dark place and I'm not emotionally strong enough to deal with what I might find, I physically can lock this trapdoor that I've got in my body. And it exists. So if you can imagine your the front of your body, so just where your esophagus is, going into your stomach, is where this trapdoor is. So when I feel unable to process anything too dark, too deep, too sorrowful, because there are still moments of that amongst my gratitude, which I promise you sounds awful, but it's really genuine. That might be quite irritating, actually. But I'd literally shut the trapdoor, and there is that song, that Sonic logo in my head going, step away from that trapdoor. And so I just don't go there.
The thing is, though, when you're going through something like this, and actually probably you use this more in your everyday life, you know, that visualising and being strong of mind, or trying to be strong of mind, and creating techniques or using, yeah, other people's techniques in order for you to be able to cope. You're, well, very good at that. And I have to say, I wouldn't call you somebody who likes fads at all, but there are lots and lots of times in our life when you've gone, right, I've read this book.
Yes.
And this is what I'm going to do now. And it could be to do with diet. It could be to do with mental health or whatever.
Yeah.
But you are one of those that likes to read up on stuff and choose something that works, yeah, for you. And that's good.
I'm going to bill that as intellectually curious.
I love it. So rather than faddy, we're going with intellectually curious.
Absolutely. All good. You see how I can put these spins on things in my own head?
Gotta be able to
spin
it.
Really, really helps. And I spin it for myself, okay? So, yeah, you're absolutely right. I am intellectually curious, and I do have a number of things that I will go to. So, for example, this week, I have restarted my cold showering, which I had built up a real tolerance to as I started wild swimming earlier on this year.
Yeah, let's just stop there for a second. So this is the most, you're talking about like this, like everybody does a cold shower and everybody goes wild swimming.
Everybody should.
Okay, but everybody doesn't.
Okay.
And I think it's so far away from anything that I would ever want to do. And I'm sure there's plenty of people out there listening. who think, yay, what a great idea. But it's not, is it the norm?
It's not the norm. It's not the norm. But I like loads of people in the country, watched the Wim Hof thing earlier on this year with Holly and Lee and Wim, and totally loved it and fell in love with the idea of using cold temperatures to strengthen your immune system and to build resilience and to exercise your cardiovascular system. Now, in the last 3 months, I'd actually stopped cold showering because Andrew and I'd been on this huge health kick, which was revolving around bodybuilding and weight training.
And we spoke about this, didn't we, in our first
chat? We did, yeah. And because I was getting up at 5 o'clock in the morning, I then just could not face...
What, lazy.
A cold shower.
Just get in the cold shower.
I just couldn't face it. So... I warm showered and then went to the gym. I just couldn't face the cold shower at 5 a.m. So I'd sacked that off and now kind of wish I hadn't really. But, you know, it is what it is. So this morning was the first day that I started cold showering again. And my tolerance to it was limited. So I started with 15 seconds after my normal warm shower. And this was at a normal wake-up time of 7, 7.30, and it felt totally doable.
What's the thinking behind this, then?
The thinking is really to train my mind to focus and to be able to breathe through challenges that come. And so if I can use breath work and cold water therapy to sort of exercise my cardiovascular system, I think... For me, it will feel like I'm contributing positively to my treatment plan.
So, like when you're pregnant and you read the hypnobirthing book and
it's exactly like that.
And then you go in, I go in, scream the house down and go, give me the drugs.
It's not like that.
It's not quite like that.
For me, and again, this is so personal to me, and it is my journey, so it might be different from other people, but I, when I was diagnosed with cancer just literally less than 2 weeks ago, I... was so devastated, as I'm sure everybody is, that I went to some very, very dark places and was probably, I was physically and emotionally incapacitated.
This was pre-trapdoor.
This was pre-trapdoor, pre-Wim Hof, pre-breathing, all of the things that I knew I could go to.
Yeah.
I was so shocked that I couldn't actually function for a good 48 hours until the shock wore off on the Friday morning. And that was when it did start to disappear. And that is when I started to feel like my usual fighting terrier self. And it was at that point, really, that I started to delve into types of breast cancer, survival rates. I started looking at all sorts of different variables. And I started to become a bit more involved with the whole process. And then...
And then you mentioned as well how you were, you found a really good podcast and stuff like that.
Yes.
No, it wasn't a podcast, was it?
It was an Insta Live. Yeah. Again, I mentioned this last week, the Titty Gritty, and there were a few others. I haven't relied on one external source too heavily, because I'm still trying to find my own way, because I think you've got to find your own path. And it's really important to listen and learn from people that have been through the same as you, but equally to really, you've got to start trusting your own instincts, I think. And it's really hard to do that when you have got a life-threatening disease. It's hard to trust what you think you know.
Yeah.
But today... I did trust what I thought I knew, and I was right. Okay, yeah. So shall I tell you about my MRI scan?
Yes, because it's happened today, hasn't
it? Yes, it happened today. I felt very anxious about the MRI scan for lots of reasons. It's an MRI scan that they did on both breasts with a contrast dye, which was going to be pumped through my arm into my breast during the MRI scan, which will and has done, although I do not know the results yet, will have lit up the breast cancer tissue that lives currently inside me. But so I was very anxious, obviously, not necessarily about the test itself, because I've had an MRI scan before. And whilst they are uncomfortable because of the positions you have to hold, they're not painful.
No.
They're just a little bit uncomfortable is probably the best thing to, the best way to describe them. I'm anxious, obviously, about the results, because although the people in my MDT have said we're looking very low risk, this really is going to reveal the extent of the cancer in a way that surgery would reveal the extent. So it will show the exact size of the lump. It will show the exact location. I believe it also will show whether it's in my lymph nodes. And I think it will also show whether it's spread. So in my mind, this is
going to be
big...
more definitive. And it actually, instead of we think it's going to be right, it is. And we know, and we've seen, and we've not seen.
Yes.
Now that is scary.
It is scary. But let me take you back to the original reason and point of telling you this story. And it was to do with trusting your own instinct. So I am tiny. I weigh 51 kilos. I'm 5 foot one. Ish at a push.
Nearly.
Yeah, I'm tiny. So needless to say, my veins are really tiny.
We have child veins.
We do have child veins. I give blood. I do good
it's
things.
It's weird, isn't it? But yeah, our veins are teeny.
They're not great, and they do collapse when interrogated. So I do know this, and I knew that I had to have a cannula fitted today. So I think that probably contributed to my anxiety around the whole procedure. But again, just for anyone out there, all totally doable. Yeah. That's my new mantra.
It's all doable.
Not pleasant, but all doable.
Yeah.
So today, the first nurse tried to put the cannula into the decent vein that she could find, and it didn't go in properly. And when they were flushing it through to make sure it was in correctly, I could feel that my arm was tightening and swelling, and they flushed it 3 or 4 times. And I knew that the cannula wasn't incorrectly, that it was not still inside my vein.
But she didn't know.
She didn't know, because she kept saying, oh, well, it's flushing really well. And I felt like saying,
right into the rest of your arm and not my vein.
So that made me faint.
Oh, my God, Larissa. Yeah.
So I felt a little...
Were you sat down?
Yeah.
Oh, please, can you what position did you end in?
Well, I kind of fainted over a long period of time. So...
God!
As this was happening, I said to her, I'm really sorry, I feel woozy, I feel a bit odd, I feel a bit strange. So she slowly lowered the bed down as my head hit the well, I wouldn't say pillow, it's not a pillow, it's a
it's
plastic
like a panty liner.
Panty liner, yeah. And then before I knew it, I was awake again and it was all fine. But it did make me feel quite nauseous because it's just not very pleasant, is
it? No, not at all.
But I kept saying it's not in the right place. Mm. It's not in the right place. And she said, well, we'll leave it in there whilst we try and find another one. So she called a few more nurses in. They had a go in my, so this was in my right arm. They had a go in my left hand. And eventually we got it into a vein in my right hand. Which, just in case this happens to anyone else, they said, oh, this is going to be so much more painful. It was not.
Was it not?
No, it was fine. It was totally fine compared to the rooting around in my arm.
The digging.
Jesus Christ. Well, hand any day. So it was absolutely fine. And once it was in and she syringed it with the flush, I could feel the sort of stinging sensation, which is what you meant to feel.
It goes in, you can feel it in your vein.
Nothing.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, then once that one was in, they took the other one out. And as they took it out, rather than blood coming out, because it was not in a vein, sort of watery blood came out. She went, oh, you were right. You think, I know.
I know.
Anyway, a really long story to tell you how I got there. But worth, if you know something, you just know it.
Yeah. Yeah. So the instinct there is you
just say, keep insisting. If you think it's true, keep going. You know, it could have been something more serious.
Yes.
And more painful, and it wasn't. But anyway, so yeah, the MRI scan was okay after that. It was fine.
Good. Okay, so that done, we didn't speak about the 3-week plan last week. This week feels like the longest week in the
entire
world.
It's been a very long week.
There was a three-week process or time frame in which the medical professionals told you last week, wasn't there? And so what's going to happen within that 3-week time frame?
So within 3 weeks from last Tuesday morning, my lovely breast care nurse told me that within 3 weeks, the MRI scan would be done. The MDT would have met to look at that. Fingers crossed, the HER2 would have been retested, and I would be in discussing my treatment plan with them. Because one of the things that the professor said at the consultation was, the important thing is that you don't panic, that we have got time. And that was music to my ears. We've got time to make sure we absolutely know what the right treatment for you is. So we don't need to rush anything, but we do need to act quickly, but we don't need to rush anything. So
that's a good sign then, isn't it?
It was a really comforting piece of information. I hope he's right.
Okay, well, I'm sure and hope he will
yes.
be. Before we do finish, I really want to touch on a huge part of your life, our life, that we didn't mention last week. And I think it's because there was so much to get in, but also it felt really painful at the time to talk about this in addition to all the other painful stuff. Your daughter, Beatrice, my beautiful niece, who I feel like is mine as well.
She is.
She pretty much is, yeah. She looks like me.
She does. That's really annoying because I did all that hard work and now don't have a genetic replica. And isn't that the only reason we have children, is to dress them up and to...
Brown hair, brown eyes, complete opposite from you.
I'm blue-eyed and blonde.
Yeah.
Kind of blonde,
yeah,
with the help of my hairdresser.
So anyway, you made the decision when you first knew, and you told me, obviously Andrew knew, your husband, you told me, our mum and Tom, my husband,
yeah,
but nobody else knew. And you made the decision not to tell her till you had some concrete information.
Yeah, my beautiful girl is 17, nearly 18, and is sharp and bright and is inquisitive.
Emotionally mature in many, many ways.
Yeah, emotionally very mature. But in the context of telling your daughter that her mother has got breast cancer, potentially could have crumbled or would have received that news, you know, in a really negative, sad way. And until I saw the doctors last Tuesday for the exact diagnosis of the type of cancer, and I thought what would be at that point a treatment plan, until I had that information that I could give to her, I felt that telling her would just make her worry. And I've now promised her, and I meant this, and I had thought this in advance, but I've promised her that from now on, we will have an open and honest dialogue, and she will be informed every step of the way of what's going on. And I'm glad that that is now going to happen, but I'm equally glad that I didn't tell her in the first instance, because if I told her on the same day that I told you, which was the Wednesday that I was told I had cancer, but with no context...
We don't know the severity.
We had no context to that cancer diagnosis. If I had only been able to give her that information, I would not have been able to answer any questions that she might have had. And I would not have been able to give her the reassurance that I felt I then could give her, actually, with the knowledge of what it actually was that we were dealing with. So I wouldn't change that decision. She was really cross with us, so me and Andrew, when we spoke to her about it, because she felt like we had not relied on her, or we hadn't got the faith that she felt she had in our relationship. I think that that was a really emotional reaction, and she subsequently sort of climbed down a little from there. And now, well, certainly since Tuesday late evening, has been the version of herself that I thought she was going to be, which is wonderful.
I think really, from our perspective, my perspective and people that I've spoken to, we think you've made the right decision. And I know you still believe that. I think you go into protection mode. And she's your daughter, and there's nobody else you want to protect more than
absolutely.
Her. And, you know, if she doesn't realise it now, one day,
it
when she has kids, do you remember Mum always used to say, when you've got children, you'll know how it feels. And actually, once, you know, when you have kids, you do realise. So, I'm glad she knows. And, she will be a wonderful support for you. I know she will.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Yeah. And just with regards to telling other people, you know, those conversations can be really difficult. And what I have done is rely on, you know, really good, close friends to disseminate the information amongst our groups
yeah.
for me. So that, I mean, I am very willing to talk about this, and I really hope that some of what I'm going through will be useful for other people going through it. But it's actually really cathartic for me to talk about it. So it's
the diary element of it, isn't it?
It's totally the diary element. And I did toy with doing a physical paper diary, and then started ordering loads of Smiths and expensive stuff. And like, no, stop.
We've got an iPhone and a sister.
Yeah, exactly.
We'll just talk it.
We'll talk it through. And this is a great decision for me. But, you know, I think recording what I do and sharing it hopefully will be useful to other people. I know it's going to be useful to me. So from a selfish point of view, it's a win-win.
Win-win. And we get to spend another half hour of our lives together. Not totally. That we don't spend enough together as it is. And talking about that, we were speaking about how every week we need to have, or you need to have and I need to have, and actually people around you, yes, close people to you, something to look forward to almost.
Yes.
Especially in these early days as well. Mm-hmm. And so I think we should finish every kind of podcast talking about what you've got this week, yeah, to look forward to, and also what you're grateful for.
Yeah, absolutely. So this week, my, as you know, Uncle Rennie and my Aunt Joyce came down from Scotland to stay with us over the weekend. So we had house guests, and we were able as a family to get together and spend the majority of the weekend together.
Yeah.
Eating together, laughing together, cuddling, crying, generally just being with one another. So I feel tremendously happy and satisfied and grateful that I was able to do that. So that was one thing I have been very grateful for. And then in terms of looking forward to, I, as you know, work on behalf of a charity, the Maggie Oliver Foundation, which we can talk a little bit more about on another podcast because they have been super supportive too. And it's our annual fundraising ball on Saturday night up in Manchester, which I'm very involved with. So I am really looking forward to hosting a table with Andrew's company and his other work partners for their clients, getting dressed up in a really beautiful gown, looking fantastic, and actually, you know, flirting and dancing with my gorgeous husband.
Aww.
For what might be the last time in a long time that I feel really normal and really healthy. So I'm taking the wins.
You've got to.
I can't wait to get glammed up.
So let me just say, this weekend we did pizza in a brewery. Next weekend you're at a
hospital. I did not do a brewery, but yes. And yeah. Oh, you're talking about the difference between the two. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. But you know what? The same effect.
That's it.
Feeling
isn't it?
Normal.
Yeah.
Feeling good. Not being self-deceptive, but just choosing to be hopeful, choosing to enjoy. I'm so fed up of people saying things like living in the moment. Seriously, I didn't know what that meant until now.
Yeah.
I'm really, really trying. And actually, it's doable. It's all doable.
It's all doable. Keep your trap door closed unless you need to enter it.
Stay away from that trap door.
And it's all doable.
And it's all doable. Yeah, my two sound bites.
I love it. On that note then, we'll say goodbye. It seems silly saying goodbye on our podcast because I'm probably going to see you tomorrow as well. But we'll say goodbye till next week. And then hopefully next week we may have some more information. I think your MDTs meet on a Monday, do they?
I am second guessing that.
Yeah.
I have no knowledge or information.
But we seem to be getting information on a Monday, don't we? Or things seem to happen on a Monday.
Yeah.
Last Monday, you got the call to say come in on Tuesday.
Yeah. So,
and then this Monday, you've had an MRI.
Yeah. I imagine it will be within a week. It may be sooner. It may be later. I don't know. But either way, I'm not going to feel anxious about it as much as possible because I'm keeping that trapdoor shut for a little while longer.
Get in your cold shower.
I'm going to be researching how to starve cancer cells with a lovely new book that I have found by a woman called Jane McClelland. So I'm going to bury my head in that, eat properly, sleep a lot, do some exercise, cold shower, dance my heart away on Saturday night with my husband.
Well, that's a wrap on episode 2. Thank you so much for listening. And thank you once again to Heather for helping me get down into a journal format all of these feelings, emotions, and a full diary of the process that I'm going through. Without you, I don't think it would be possible. If you've enjoyed this podcast, then please hit subscribe. That way you'll know when the next episode is coming out. If you've really, really enjoyed it, not only tell your friends, but also please give me a 5-star review so that hopefully other people can start listening too. In the meantime, whilst waiting for the next episode, you can follow my journey on Twitter and Instagram. Simply search for the handle Breast is History, and please start sharing your stories with me over there. Well, I'll see you next time, and hopefully with some more good news, but this time from the MRI scan. Take care.